Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Today on Images of the Past, we're talking about one of the most photographed artifacts in the collection of the Adams Museum. For that conversation, let's bring in archivist Jessica Michak from Deadwood History Incorporated. Jessica, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thank you.
So let's talk about the engine itself. Where does it sit and what does it look like?
Well, the engine sits pretty prominently on display in the Adams Museum. It's one of the first things that you see when you walk through the doors. It's in the back of the building, so you kind of look down the hallway at it, and it's very large and impressive and certainly one of our heaviest and most photographed art items.
And the kids all say wow when they come in.
They do, yeah. Yeah. I think any child that has a love of trains is certainly impressed by it.
So tell me the story of how it ended up in South Dakota, and then we'll talk about how it ended up at the museum itself.
Okay. Well, the engine was ordered by the Homestake Mine in 1879, and it was built by the Baldwin Locomotive Works in Baltimore, Maryland. And from there, from Baltimore, it was transported via a larger railway to Bismarck, where it was then hauled to lead South Dakota by bull train. It was the first steam-powered locomotive to the Black Hills, and it was used primarily for use in the mine. It was intended to haul ore in and around the mine and the mills.
So what was happening before it arrived? How was the ore being mined? Or hauled? How was it being hauled?
Well, prior to that, it was all animal-powered, you know, vehicles and things. And so this was really the first step towards kind of this more efficient, superior method of transportation.
So can you take me back to that time and tell me what it's like to live in the area and work in the area under those conditions?
I think it was pretty hard and pretty labor intensive at that time. You know, so when the area was first settled, it was all placer mining, you know, which is bending over the streams and, you know, really, really getting into it. And then as kind of hard rock mining took over and the Homestake Mine was established, they needed to be able to move bigger loads faster and more efficiently. And so that's where they kind of turned to the railroad.
And so then how does life change once engines like this arrive?
I think it certainly increased efficiency quite a bit. And it kind of, this was, you know, a smaller engine, so it ran on 22-inch gauge tracks, and it was kind of not quite the same as the railroad that they had in other parts of the country. You know, people in this area were still advocating very seriously to get bigger railroads, which didn't come until much later. So this was really, you know, kind of a first step in that direction.
Mm-hmm. So there's some kind of debate over whether this is the first locomotive.
There is.
In the area. What, tell me about that.
Yeah, interestingly enough, we have it on display, you know, with the sign as the first locomotive in the Black Hills. Yeah. And I've been with Deadwood History for 3 years, and in that short time I've had a couple locals and some researchers, you know, just people that are railroad enthusiasts, you know, mention, oh, you know, it's actually not the first one. and that kind of made me curious and made me want to investigate that a little bit more. And what I've found through all my research, it is, in fact, the first steam-powered locomotive. I think some of the historical confusion about it is that since it had operated on a smaller gauge than a traditional narrow gauge rail, so, you know, it was operating on for the mine, so it had much smaller tracks.
Okay.
So these 22-inch versus the regular 36-inch, that's kind of where the confusion comes in, is that it was much smaller. And then since it was used exclusively by the mine, some people don't count that as the first locomotive. So the first actual locomotive that was used exclusively for the railroad was called the George Hurst, and that came 2 years later.
What's this one called?
The George Hurst was the one used for the railroad.
Right. What is the one that you have at the...
Oh, sorry. The G.B. Hagen.
Hagen. Okay.
Yeah, and both of them are named after two of the capitalists that founded the Homestake Mine.
So what do we know about J.B. Hagen?
Not much. We don't have a ton of information about him on our in our collection, but we do know that he was a capitalist from California that invested in the Homestake Mine pretty early on. He was one of the first presidents of the mine, and you know, he's pretty involved. He had already made kind of a fortune for himself, in both in the banking industry and the mining industry, before he ever had a presence in South Dakota.
How do you take care of something like this? How do you preserve it or conserve it? What has it gone through in its time with you to maintain it?
Well, when it first entered the museum, you know, back in the day, it was given a polish and a cleaning and a repainting to kind of be prepared to be on display. And then since then, we clean it about as regularly and as thoroughly as we do with the rest of the collections that are on display. Mm-hmm. So that's, we try to do that probably every other year. We'll give it a good, thorough cleaning, and then it gets a regular dusting.
Is that like,
you know,
the cool
the
job? That's, you like fight over that job to see who gets to, or is it the job you don't want? It's so big.
I mean, I personally don't mind it.
So. It's going to take up part of your day, though.
Yeah,
sure.
It does. But we try to kind of keep it in a routine with our regular cleaning, so it's not too overwhelming.
How long did it, was it in operation?
It operated from 1879, and then they retired it in 1901. And then they used it again in 1926 for the Golden Jubilee, which was the 50th anniversary of the mine. So it came out for that. And then it was put on display in the Adams Museum in 1932.
And how did the Adams end up getting it? Is it donated then, or was it acquired?
Yeah, it was donated. You know, they I think at the time, you know, the Adams Museum opened in 1930, mm-hmm. So it was kind of, what an impressive item to be put on display. That would be so interesting to have. So they kind of worked out an arrangement to get it down there in 1932. And they built a temporary track from lead and just rolled it right into the museum, into the building. So.
Like pushing it, or they?
No, it operated by itself. Yeah. Yeah.
So give me an idea how it operates and how does it function? You have one person operates it?
Yeah, so it would be like one engineer on it, and then it's steam powered, so wood burning. So
does it still work now?
It would. I believe it would still be operational. It was still functional in 1932 when it came in. It came down on its own power. So
why was it retired then? Was it obviously still functioning?
I think it's just, you know, they replaced it with newer equipment. You know, they probably wanted to get bigger rails at the time, too. So, you know, just kind of like anything you would use that in that way.
Were there,
you know, you'd get a new computer after a couple years, so this is kind of the same idea.
Were there a lot of engines similar to this at its apex of mining?
There were, yeah. This one, funnily enough, actually had an identical twin. So, you know, and then as the mine just kept getting bigger, and then they added more of this type and then bigger ones as well. So they had more, I think, that were of the George Hearst size, which was much bigger. And then that kind of grew into the bigger rail lines.
And then
what
happened to its twin?
It was also retired, but I think it was retired several years later.
Do we know where it is now?
I don't know.
That's a mystery. Someone's got a 5-ton twin somewhere, and we don't know where it's at.
Yeah. It may have been dismantled for parts. I don't know. But
Jessica, maybe it's out running somewhere. Someone's taking it around the back.
Oh, yeah.
The backyard.
Just cruising around Deadwood.
Jessica Michak, thank you so much for joining us today with that story. We really appreciate that.
Thank you.
And keep in mind, you can see all the images of the past segments with photos and sometimes video on our website, sdpb.org/imagesofthepast. That's our show for today. We hope that it served you. I'd like to thank our guests, Joyce Milninski, Delta David Geyer, Joe Horowitz, and Jessica Michak. Thanks as well to SDPB's Chris Lawfrey, Gina Myrose, Gary Ellenbolt, and Owen DeYoung. Tomorrow on Midday, we've got the stories and conversations that make lunchtime more interesting. Coming up tomorrow, it's a new collection of the letters of Laura Ingalls Wilder. We've got the author of a new book and a whole lot more. Meet me at noon Central, 11 Mountain. For SDPB Radio, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.